The Shilling Show continues here. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. We welcome you and thank you for participating here in this forum. And all points of view are welcome on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number. We have a really, I don't know, it's a touchy subject because people just don't want to talk about it. And from a personal point of view, it took Joan and I many, many years before we finally just buckled down and sat down and put an estate plan together. And, you know, when you're young, you kind of think nothing's ever going to happen to me. We all know that we're mortal beings, but it seems so far away that you just don't bother with it. And so we finally, some years ago, decided to sit down and get this done and contacted an attorney and went through all this stuff and pretty much feel like we have our ducks in a row. But that was, you know, a long time after we were married that we finally did that, and it was after we had children. And so today's conversation with David Murata is something I want you to pay attention to. Even if you've already done some preliminary work, there may be some things to reconsider, some things to change or to go over. And David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's interesting. Estate planning is a touchy subject. I remember the first time my my father and mother sat us down, us children down, and said, we want to talk about our estate plan. And what's an estate plan? A estate plan, you know, so if something happens to us, what's going to happen in the family and to our finances and everything else? And my first question was, are you dying? You know, what's wrong?
Yeah.
I was a teenager. I'm glad to say my father every year since then has sent me his updated estate plan, mm-hmm. and he's still around. He's celebrating his 90th birthday
wow.
this year, and it's good to have. I've, you know, as a financial planner, I've seen estate settlements go very badly, mm-hmm. and I just know the things that can go wrong. And on average, everyone is going to experience one estate plan where they have to help settle it, and then they'll have their own estate plan when they pass away. And so it's not a very common experience. And as a result, probably most of the listening audience has no estate plan. They have nothing in place to say what's going to happen. And what happens if you die without anything, a will, no estate plan, no wishes, is your estate falls into probate and the state tries to decide what's going to happen. And generally things go in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the good news for most people is, you know, generally if you want the estate's estate plan, it'll go almost in the right directions. But it's so much better because you're unique to be able to set out what your own estate plan is. And most people don't do it until they have children. Because children are one of the things they think about. Well, what happens to me? Who's going to get that? Who's going to get my kids? Who's mm-hmm. going to take care of them? And that seems to be the most important issue. But doing an estate plan, it has two unintended side effects that are great, that are great benefits. And so this is the carrot, if you will, to get your estate in order. The first one is the most important part of estate planning isn't really avoiding probate or reducing estate taxes. It's helping to achieve financial harmony, because when you die without an estate plan, no one knows what to do and no one has the authority to tell people what to do. So the first thing that has to happen is somebody has to be in charge, and now that person is in charge and gets to decide everything, and all of the other family members, no matter what happens, are going to be mad because that wasn't mom and dad's wishes. I know what mom and dad's mm-hmm. wishes were. They told me something different. And so not having an estate plan, not having any of your wishes written down, really puts people, family members who might be a little reticent and people pleasers at the mercy of those who might be a little bit bossy. And you've probably left the bossy one in charge. They're probably the one who's going to take charge and go down to the court and say, I'm going to settle the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could very much end up driving a wedge between your children in a way that you didn't need to. If you just said, I wanted that necklace to go to Susie because I know Susie wouldn't even ask for it. And so now that it's written down, Susie's going to get it because she doesn't have to hold back hoping that maybe, you know, someone else thinking maybe somebody else wants it more mm-hmm. than her. There's all kinds of things like that. And the second thing that comes from putting your estate plan in place is the very first step in an estate plan is doing a net worth statement. It's just listing everything you own. And I did this a number of years back to make sure all my beneficiary designations were in order. And I made the list, and then I found out afterwards for the next 2 weeks, I kept thinking of something else that wasn't on the list. And I found out my initial list was about half of the things, maybe even less than maybe about 40% of the mm-hmm. things I needed to put beneficiary designations on. And the other half came to me over the period of the next couple of weeks. you don't think of some things. Like, you don't think of, oh, well, I've got this collection that I really should designate mm-hmm. where it goes. Or I've got a health savings account. That's not one of our normal accounts.
It doesn't come to mind, yeah, really.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of things like that, and you'll make a complete list. And that list gets used in financial planning for a lot of other things. So mm-hmm. it's the first step in getting your financial house in order, is to just make that net worth and decide what happens to if you die, to all those things.
You know, what's so hard about this is that people have to, you know, the people who are making the decision to do this, it's an affirmative decision to face your own mortality. And it's very easy for people to just put it off for years, as my wife and I did, although we mentioned it and thought of it occasionally. But you really have to say, hey, I'm going to be gone someday. And you may witness around you people that thought they had a lot of time ahead of them, and something happened and poof, they were gone in an instant, as opposed to, well, maybe I have 6 months notice here because I got cancer and the doctor says I got 6 months to live. Now I'll do it. You don't have a guarantee there, and people don't like to think about that.
Yeah, and if you think to yourself, well, you know, it's really hard for me to gather all that information together, think how hard it would be for a total stranger who hasn't been living in your house and doesn't mm-hmm. know what you're doing mm-hmm. to suddenly try to take over it. It's really a burden that you put on your children. I've heard it said, if you have an enemy, make them the executor of your estate, because it's a terrible punishment.
It is. And the other thing that complicates things now that wasn't the case before is that everything is electronic. And so we have all these things that are locked up in someone's computer behind a password or in online accounts. And the laws really haven't caught up in many instances to account for that. So you may be an executor, but do you necessarily have some access to get the password to the account so that you can find out what's going on?
Yeah, Austin Fay from our firm has done a series of articles on the digital estate and how do you pass a digital estate on to people. I mean, if you think about your Kindle books that you've bought, you have a huge library. It would mm-hmm. probably fill a room. And what do you want to have happen to that? If you have an Audible account, you probably have a huge collection of Audible books. And so what do you want to have happen to that? The list goes on and on. What do you want to have happen to your Facebook account with mm-hmm. all the things that you've got collected there? And a digital estate is becoming greater and greater. And the laws for that are changing so that you can pass some of that on to other people. We've written an article on our website. We wrote it specifically intended for children to give the article to their parents mm-hmm. to open the discussion. So it's called Your Parents' Estate Plan, mm-hmm. and one of the reasons why we wrote it is we wanted an article you could hand to your parents, and it just basically says, if I have any part in your estate plan, here are the list of things that it would be helpful to discuss with me mm-hmm. if you want. And so mm-hmm. it's kind of offered as a, if you would like me to know something, then I will be more emotionally prepared for the things that you may be asking me to do in your estate plan. And if not, that's fine. I just sort of want to know. I'm not trying to inherit early. I just want to know in place how to execute your wishes. And it goes from everything from, you've suddenly been killed and now I need to prepare a funeral mm-hmm. and I need to know what you wanted done with the house and the contents of the house and everything else. And it's just difficult at that moment of grieving to also suddenly take on an entirely new role, and that is the role of executor.
It is interesting, and I think of two examples. One was my own parents, who did this when I was quite young, maybe a little younger than you, when they told me, and I had the same reaction. It's like, oh, man, I don't want to think about my parents dying, you know, but they said, hey, we've got a trust, and we've just put this thing together. And the other was my parents-in-law, who did not have anything in place and had a tremendous amount of dispersed assets and real estate and things like that. And so I was actually there during this time and present when they sat with the attorney to put their living trust together, knowing that Dad was sick and wasn't going to be around that long. And so it was interesting to witness all of that from a firsthand perspective. It is 12:28 here on The Shilling Show. We're heading now to news and weather at the bottom of the hour. Come back on the other side. We'll take your calls, 977-1070. David Marotta is our guest. We're talking about estates and wills and beneficiary designation. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. Shilling Show continues. David Morata is our guest. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. We're talking about wills and estates and creative beneficiary designation ideas. So one of the things people have to figure out is, you know, how are we going to split this up? Who's going to benefit from this? Who will be named the beneficiary of these various accounts or given these things? And there are a number of non-traditional ways or a will substitutes that I'd never really thought of in this context. So maybe we could talk about some of those, David.
Yeah. Basically, you can put a beneficiary designation on a lot of sort of strange things. Obviously, accounts can be have beneficiary designations. And beneficiary designations will trump an estate plan. So if you have an estate plan, putting beneficiary designations on that actually will bypass the trust. The trust may say it gets divided among your children. The checking account says payable on death to Susie. Susie gets the whole thing. The children get nothing.
Wow.
So beneficiary designations on specific accounts, you have to use carefully if you have an estate plan because mm-hmm. it's not going to flow through the estate plan. So joint accounts, for example, will often bypass an estate plan because the joint account means you both own the entire thing. And if Susie and you are joint on the account, then what that means is the account is owned by you and Susie, and when you're dead, it's owned by Susie, and it doesn't go to your children. So joint account titling, you have to be a little bit careful. You can have a power of attorney where someone else can act on your behalf with the account. Mm-hmm. Then they don't own the account. They just have a power of attorney to do stuff. And a lot of older people end up putting one child on as a joint owner of an account mm-hmm. rather than what they really want is they want them to have full power of attorney to pay their bills. And those are two very different things. So you can see how estate plans can go terribly wrong just with simple things like that. Another thing is if you have an intention, maybe you have the intention that I've told young Robert that when it's time for him to go to college, I will make sure his way gets paid to college. Mm-hmm. Now you die and you are remarried to someone else. It's not even their kid. They inherit everything. And suddenly they're not as interested in paying Robert's way to college. So when you have intentions like that, you really do need to write things down. Even if you're just trying to leave your comic book collection to the nephew that loves Spider-Man, mm-hmm. you need to write that down. Otherwise, other people are going to get your comic collection. And so even writing down your intentions on a sheet of paper and signing it and making copies to give to people is better than not having an estate plan. We recommend if there's anything complex going on that you go to an estate planning mm-hmm. attorney and you get it done correctly. But you know, I'll be the first one to say it's better to have a sheet of paper where you've written down your wishes. You can even have it notarized or witnesses or anything else like that. But even just in your own handwriting, a sheet of paper is better than nothing.
You know, maybe I'm thinking of the movies or TV shows where this has been the case. And it seems like, you know, somebody found a piece of paper over in the desk there. And then for some reason it goes to an attorney or it goes to court and they say, hey, that's totally invalid. But you're saying that may give some direction, even if it's not a legal document or hasn't been legally filed with anybody, that it may give direction to what, a third party?
I know it's very common in TV shows and movies to have that, you know, be called into question or not called into question. But your wishes written out in your own handwriting, signed and dated, mm-hmm. is a valid will.
Okay.
So that works. Now, obviously, you have to be careful when you change your wishes, what do you do with the original copy? And so you can have multiple copies of a will in which you've changed your wishes. And being able to change your wishes is one of the things that you should do. So even though some of your listening audience might have an estate plan, they may not have an estate plan that they've even looked at in 7 years. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've been doing for our clients over this past year is we've been reading their estate plan, summarizing their wishes, and then asking, you know, sometimes we'll ask them to tell us, what do you think your intentions are? And they'll tell us their intentions. And sometimes it matches. Most of the time it does. But sometimes it doesn't match. Oh, yeah, I remember, you know, back then 10 years ago when I did that. Yeah, I wanted that other thing to happen. I don't want that to happen now. But they haven't looked at their estate plan in a number of years. And so just the ability to do a flexible estate plan where you have a list of bequests that you can swap in and out periodically that you review every year. Is a benefit to that as well.
977-1070 is the phone number. Our guest is David Morata, the president of Morata Wealth Management, and online at moradaonmoney.com. If you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. And there's a line open right now at 977-1070. So there's some other things to be considered here, and we talk about beneficiaries, and then we also talk about an executor. And the executor, I'm going to let you explain what that person does and what the responsibility is, but there's a number of important considerations for executors.
Yes. The executor of an estate is someone that you have designated to help settle your affairs. And if there's a trust involved, there's usually a trustee. That's another role that someone can play. And the trustee, for those of you who don't know what a trust is, when you die, all of your belongings, if you will, all your worldly possessions, fall into probate, and the court has to set someone who's the executor of your estate to help fulfill whatever it is that you wanted to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
With a trust is like having a glove, and the glove is holding on to your belonging. And when you die, your hand gets slipped out of the glove, and the next successor trustee's hand gets slipped into the glove, and therefore it doesn't fall into probate. It's owned by, not by you, it's owned by the trust. You are the trustee. When you die, you say who the next trustee is, and it doesn't fall into probate. And avoiding probate, there's a little bit of tax that gets from the courts that gets put on probate, but it all, and it also becomes all of public record. But probate just takes more time, and it kind of grinds through the court process, whereas a trust happens immediately according to the trust document, and there's never a day in which the assets are not being held by someone. The minute the next trustee, you die, the next trustee is the trustee. They present their credentials according to the trust, and the asset is immediately theirs.
Let's talk about the qualities that people should be looking for and other considerations when they're saying, hey, this person's going to be the executor. I know some people who thought it would be wise to use a third party, like an attorney, who is outside of the family dynamic. Is that always a good idea, or what are the things people should think about when they're choosing this person?
Yeah, most people make the mistake of treating all their children equally in their estate plan. You didn't treat them equally when you were raising them. You knew they were different individuals, and so you tried to treat them, each of them, uniquely. They are unique individuals, and the other mistake is simply picking the eldest child to be the executor of the, of the estate. Your eldest child may be the most responsible. It's one of the things that firstborn children often are, but they may not be the right one to be the executor of the estate. And you should pick someone who is the best qualified to be able to handle the legal and financial accounting that needs to be done according to that. And they need to have the time and the ability to do that. And it could very well be that no one has the time and ability to do that, in which case a third party can sometimes help take that off. I think the worst way to drive a wedge between two siblings is to set one of them as the as being in charge of the money that the other one receives. That's kind of the worst family dynamic, because now all of a sudden I want to use my money. The reason why you put older brother or older sister in charge is because I'm a spendthrift, and so I know I'm going to be spending more money, and it's their job to say no, and I don't want a parent saying no. And so it's better at that point to put a third party saying no, someone that they hate, and give older sibling the ability to fire the trustee if they're not doing a good job. That's called trust protection, if you will. That role, give them that role, and that way they're the good guy who's going to come in if the trustee's not doing his job correctly. But if the trustee's doing his job correctly, then the trustee gets to be the bad guy.
There's another consideration here, and you mentioned it earlier, and I remember my parents telling me, you know, hey, here's who's going to take care of you if something happens to us. And again, that's a hard conversation to have with kids, but it is an important part, because after all, I mean, children aren't a possession, but they're a gift of God. And so part of all of this, if you have kids that are minors, is that you need to think about them not only financially, but personally.
Yeah, I consider it the greatest of honors is if you ask someone to take care of your kids when you die, because what it means is you think that they would be raising probably your most most prized and special possession. I remember often that's a family member. But sometimes you look around at your family members and you think, for one reason or another, they're really not the right people to be raising my kids. And you want someone who's got either more shared values or has their life together better, or something along those lines, and you just want to stop and think through, actually, who would I rather my kids be put with? Either because they know my kids and my kids know them, and they, my kids feel comfortable with them, and there's a relationship there, and it's not, you know, it's not the beginning of some comedy movie where uncle has, you know, inherited a bunch of kids and now he's going to learn a life lesson on being responsible. You just don't want to do that to your kids. They're not the subject of a comedy movie. And so I consider that a great honor when you get asked. You also need to be careful how many times you say yes, because you could end up with, you know, 18 kids if something happens to everyone. And you need to figure out what that will do to your own family. You know, if you've got two kids and suddenly you're going to inherit five more from another family if something happens to them. But yes, I think that's probably the most important reason to develop an estate plan, is not only to figure out how the kids are going to be taken care of, but where's the money that's going to take care of them? Mm-hmm. Do you have adequate term life insurance? And have you thought that through? And then also, when will they, the kids, receive the money that may be left in trust for them? And how will that all be taken care of? And so, you know, giving a big pile of money to an 18-year-old may not be the best thing to do. You may want to put some brakes on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, because there's a lot of talk about this, about all the people that have won the lottery and it's destroyed their lives. And it's not like most people listening are going to leave lottery type money to their kids. But that same principle holds true even for a moderate sum of money. Just dumping it on somebody who can't handle it, it really can be a life ruiner.
It can. And so I've seen a number of different legal ways to set withdrawal limits on inherited accounts. You can simply use the Internal Revenue Service's required minimum distributions to say, these are the things I want you to have every year as a result. And that gives them a smaller lifetime income rather than a one-year lump sum. Mm-hmm. And sure, they get a little bit this year, they blow it. They get a little bit next year, they blow it. But each year they get another amount that they can either use wisely or blow. And it's easier then for them to learn to grow more responsible because you haven't just given them a huge windfall that means they don't have to work.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one final segment with David Murata. We're talking today about estate planning and beneficiary designation. We come back on the other side. I want to talk about some of the unique needs that people need to consider when they are putting together an estate plan. So stay with us. The Shilling Show back. Final segment for this hour in just a moment. The Shilling Show continues. Our final brief segment here with David Murata, talking about wills, estates, estate planning, beneficiaries, and designation. All right, so people have unique needs, and I think sometimes, and maybe, I don't know of any particular place, but there are probably places that use like a boilerplate or a template and just put everybody into the same thing and do it really cheap. And people need to consider their own unique needs. Let's talk about some of the considerations.
Yeah, we've read dozens and dozens of estate plans, and the worst ones I've ever seen usually come in a huge binder, and I can tell they've been kicked out by automated software, and they have all kinds of provisions in it that when you read through, I just know that none of these apply to the client. They're just boilerplate provisions to say stuff, and it's a bunch of legalese. The best ones I've read are very short, actually, and they're handcrafted by a great estate planning attorney. Because the real questions are the you know, and we've learned how to ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. We don't write estate plans, but we've learned how to ask the right questions. So, for example, if you have pets, what do you want to happen with the pets? If you have a child with special needs, how are you going to provide for that? If you have an operating business, that gets incredibly important, because that operating business can't skip a day.
Right.
And so you have to have things in place such that somebody's going to take over that business immediately tomorrow. You just imagine you're running a restaurant. You die tonight. Tomorrow morning, the restaurant's got to be open for business.
Right.
And how's that going to happen? If you have any kind of real estate and you're dividing it among three children, who gets to say when it gets sold and when it gets just inherited by a family member? You want those rules to be very specifically set out. And maybe you hope it's going to be a vacation home for all three of them, and one of them just wants his share of the money. And now how do they divide that? So any kind of an asset that needs to be sold to be divided, well, you need a buy-sell agreement if you want one child to be able to keep it. And so, you know, all of these issues are really unique to you. And there's one estate planning attorney, and I know she, one of her specialties is when you own horses, because there's a whole other set of rules there. If you
is that an asset or a liability?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
Kind of like
question.
A boat.
Yeah, like a boat and a horse. They're incredibly expensive. And then you have to provide for who's going to continue to feed them and how is that asset going to continue to be taken care of. So all of those are very unique situations, and sometimes just asking the right questions will get you thinking about what do I really want to have happen. And what you want to have happen is the very personal part that needs to be written into the estate plan.
We've got time for a call. Let's say hello to Henry. Henry, welcome to the Shilling Show, and you're on with David Murata.
Hey, David. Thank you for your columns in the local paper. I appreciate the information.
Yeah, thank
you. Question. On a trust, is it normal for the trust writer, the company that writes a trust, to give an outline of operation for the executor?
A lot of people who write trusts will also serve as helping the executor to go through the process of making sure that everything gets settled. So yes,
an individual operation for each different outfit.
Yes. And so a lot of estate planning attorneys have taken on the additional business of helping people by being executor. That's a whole service. The charges for that they can be extremely high, but if they're reasonable, they're around 0.3% of the estate. I think that's a fair executor. Then they would file all of the trust documents. They would handle all of the accounting, and they would also advise whoever is working on it, to whoever else is in charge of that to be able to do that. So professional trust management is a whole service. And when people write an estate plan, good attorneys who write an estate plan, and we have pushed all of the attorneys that we work with, is to provide a first cover letter to say, here is how to actually implement this estate plan, because it often involves changing a number of beneficiary designations. When we read estate plans, we actually write a series of summaries about the estate plan to give that broad overview of what's going on. We do it for our benefit, but we also do it so that we can report back to the client, here's the summary, and we think that that makes sense. And I'm amazed at the number of times we read an estate plan and we have questions of things that we think are not quite written correctly, or maybe the client's needs have changed or their wishes have changed. Because it's because it's out of date or because there's something strange in the writing of it.
David, what a fascinating topic. And I know people can read more about this because you have several pieces on the topic at MurataOnMoney.com. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and I hope everyone out there doesn't need their estate plan for many years to come.
That's right. Okay, we're going to go into news and weather at the top of the hour. We'll have time for open phones when we come back on the other side, and the number is 977-1070. You can get in line right now. Ellie stands by, 434-977-1070. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Stay with The Shilling Show here on News Radio 1070 and 98.9 FM, WINA. Back home.